Geraint Wyn Davies is a Welsh-Canadian actor who has starred in numerous plays, movies, and television shows since his debut in 1977. We met Mr. Davies in September of 2023 and completely lost our minds. After we came to, we had one goal in mind: watch everything he has ever been in so that next time we're ready. How has this man made a career out of making out on screen? Will this be enough to help us make it through the next meeting, still conscious? This isn't a podcast. It's an inoculation.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Meg. And this is Gair Can Get It. This week, Gair visits us in our dreams and maybe gives us smallpox.
If they gave awards for makeouts on screen or stage, this guy would get a lifetime achievement. He'll find any excuse to get right to suck and face. You honestly wouldn't believe it. Dissecting each and every kiss with tongue. There's only one conclusion to come to. It's that Gair can get it.
So, this week we're discussing a movie called Ikwe, which, fun fact, that's just the Ojibwe word for girl. Did you notice that she has no facial expressions at all at any point in the entire movie? She is just stone-faced staring, like she's so fucking angry.
I think, okay, so we read that quote from the director who was like, I don't know, I hired the white actors the way you normally do, but then I just went off into the woods and like threw sticks until I found some native issues.
Okay, so let me read this quote. Okay, so we don't know for sure that this is an accurate quote because the source is something that I cannot find myself independently, but this is a quote that apparently is with Norma Bailey, who is the director of Ikwe, and the quote is, "For the Daughters of the Country series of films about Métis women," and as a side note, Métis is just is the word for people that are half Native and half white people. "So for the Daughters of the Country series of films about Métis women, I developed the idea from reading the history. I said, okay, I'll make these fictitious people, and this is what they're going to do. I did very little research with people. It was secondary to reading all the books that are around. There were four women who wrote the scripts for me, and I developed the material with them. They wanted to do it because of what I wanted to do, which is focus on women. Well, for the performers, I'm just scouring reserves everywhere looking for Indians who can act. The whites for the film, I get through regular agencies, go to Toronto and do a casting. That's pretty straightforward. But the Indians, you've just got to hunt around in Calgary, Manitoba, Alberta, and some from Ontario. The crew I've got from Manitoba are all freelance. The NFB doesn't have a staff crew in the regions." End quote. And the NFB is the National Film Board of Canada, because this is a movie that is sponsored by, or I guess financially supported by, the Canadian Film Board, and it's got that vibe. But yeah, let's talk more about how that's the most racist thing that we've ever read.
Yeah, and this feels very 90s, like stone-faced.
But like the Native. The rest of her tribe, like, they emote. Like, the grandma, the lady who plays the grandma, Gladys Taylor, she emotes a whole bunch. She's like, oh, I'm sad that my granddaughter's going away. Oh, I'm happy that she's coming back. But, like,
this just feels like she got this direction. Because she's also mystical. Like, she pre-dreams.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we need to discuss that. We need to discuss this. Okay.
And so it's very Native American mysticism meets, like, stone-faced Native, which is, like, the two 90s. Like, they had a love child, and it was Ikwe.
I know. There's a lot of, like, I don't think it's actually pan flute, but, like, the vibe with this whole movie is pan flute.
Pan flute.
Like, if that tells you. So, okay, let me... I'm trying to find like a short way to describe this movie.
Okay, sorry.
No, it's on me. So, Gair plays a Scottish fur trader. Gair plays a Scottish fur trader named Angus. He is with a Cree guy named Bluecoat because he wears a blue coat.
And they set up an agreement.
They set up an agreement with a tribe of Ojibwe. So they go to the tribe. They're like, hey, you guys give us beaver pelts, which we're going to use to make fancy hats, because it was the fancy beaver hat period of Canadian history, which is all that I remember from any history class I ever learned. Literally, it's like the fur, every history class when I was a kid starts with the fur traders, and after that, I have no idea. Like, that's like 300 years of history. I have no idea after the fur traders. It's like the 1700s, fur traders, and then I like blackout. But like the fur trade, like I got it up here. So yeah. Beaver pelt hats, they're real big. They're real fancy. Everyone wants them. So Gare's like, I'm going to make me some money by getting some fur pelts, some beaver pelts. So he and the Cree guy, they go to visit the Ojibwe. They're like, you guys give us pelts. We're going to give you muskets and also like fancy silverware, which sure, whatever, man. And also mirrors, which you're afraid of. Okay. So it's a whole, this movie's a lot. So you're going to give us stuff. We're going to give you stuff. And then the tribe is like, we don't super trust Gare because he's hairy and ugly, which they keep saying over and over again. He smells, he's hairy and he's ugly. And I was like, oh, I mean, this is the one movie I think where someone comments on Gare's appearance and it's not world's most fuckable man, we love you, you're so handsome. It's literally everyone going, what a hideous, ugly, and I'm just like, all right, I mean, fair. You could maybe stop commenting that every 30
it's
seconds.
The fake beard.
The hair and the beard. We're going to get there. The hair and beard are so much. But okay, so Gare's like, I'm going to give you guys muskets and silverware and jewelry maybe, and you guys are going to give me beaver pelts. And they're like, cool, yes, except we don't trust you. So the Cree guy's like, you don't trust them. They don't trust you. What if, hear me out, the Ojibwe chief, your daughter, Ikwe, which again is just the Ojibwe word for girl, because nobody gave a shit in this movie. What if you give girl to Gare? And then Gare has girl, he's family. And then again, they have to make comments about like, I don't want an ugly son-in-law. His mother must have been a dog. Ha ha ha, fucking whatever. So dad, the chieftain, is like, okay, that sounds fair. All right, Ikwe, go pack up your one blanket and your one dress. Get in the fucking canoe. Bye. So he like doesn't give a shit. He is so... It's really funny to me, like, that later in the movie, he's like, oh, we miss you. And I'm like, you took 30 seconds to be like, I can get guns? Get in the fucking boat. And I'm like, okay. So he sends her on the canoe. Gare puts her in the canoe, takes her off, decides her name is Mary. And I'm just like, oh, no. Oh, God. So fucking racist. He learns the Ojibwe language a little tiny bit. He has, like, a couple of sentences. I would be really curious if, like, someone who actually speaks Ojibwe, which I really hope we have several Ojibwe listeners to this, the greatest podcast ever recorded. if, like, an Ojibwe listener could tell me, like, if what he's saying or if it's any good, because the movie gives you subtitles when it feels like it, and fuck you if you want them otherwise. So he takes Ikwe, a.k.a. Mary, off to be his wife, and I am very glad that, like, there's only one kiss you see between them the whole movie, because Hazel King, the actress who played Ikwe, was 15. Gonna pause there. Let's all just soak that into our souls. One, yeah. And then five. That's the entire amount of her age. 15. Gare was 29. So I don't love it. I don't love this dynamic. I don't want to watch them kissing on screen. They get one kiss and like from the back, you don't really see it. Thank you very much, slightly racist director lady. But anyways, apparently off screen, they get it on because they have three kids, a little boy, Daniel, whose First Nations name I don't remember. And then a little girl named Catherine, whose First Nations name I also didn't remember. And then a baby who I don't think gets a name, just baby. So boy, girl, baby. Gare is like, oh, all the First Nations people, they're dumb and mean. And then all the First Nations people are like, Gare is stupid and delicate. So I'm like, well, at least they both think very little of each other. I guess that's progress. Thanks, Film Board of Canada. So Gare is like, oh, I don't like the way that they're raising my boy in their culture. So I'm not going to tell Ikwe this. I'm just going to get one of my drunk fur trader friends to pop my son on a boat, take him off to some residential school. That's never fucked up anybody. This will be great. He sends the kid off. Ikwe is mad at him because you just stole my son. So yeah. Ikwe is like, fuck you, dude. So she packs up little girl. She packs up little baby. She packs up all of her Hudson Bay blankets, which all the blankets in the movie with the stripes on them, those are... It's like a Canadian icon, but essentially the short version is that they were used, I believe, in lieu of currency. So like there's stripes on them, and then there's also, you can't see in the movie because it's what do you call it? Lo-fi, low res. Yeah. But like there's these little, if you ever look up a Hudson Bay blanket, there are little black short lines that go down the bottom right hand side, and those are called the points. And so the more points on the blanket, the more money that it's worth. So it's called the Hudson Bay Point Blanket. It's if you're not Canadian, you don't give a shit. But like as a Canadian, it's like, bing, it's like a thing. It's like a thing. Anyways, so all those blankets are basically how you know how rich everybody is, because they're all wearing these giant, it's like wearing a fur coat today. It's like a really expensive thing.
Gotcha.
So anyway, so Gare sends his kid off to be educated. Ikwe's like, fuck you, dude. So she packs up the baby, packs up the little girl, gets in her canoe, goes back to her family. We never see Gare again. We see him when he's sleeping. He's gone. No idea what happens to him the rest of the movie. Ikwe comes back home. Everybody has smallpox. everybody dies of smallpox except for Ikwe's older daughter, Catherine, who doesn't seem to have the smallpox. So Ikwe is like, take your blanket, take your little dress, walk down by the river. I hope you don't die. Mommy's going to die now. So is your baby sister. We're all dead. The fucking end. And
the end.
And
of the movie.
Of the whole movie. Everyone's dead but you. So most of the movie plays just sort of like, here's a historical epic. Like, here's the way that things were in 1769 to 1778. Here is, like, the story of a fur trader that could be any fur trader. Like, it's supposed to be, like, a typical whatever.
Yeah.
Except there's, like, one key little difference, which is to say that Ikwe is psychic. Ikwe is psychic. Ikwe has fucking... I'm going to say it one more time. Ikwe is psychic. She has preternatural dreams.
I thought all natives were...
Because it's 1986. Of course all natives are psychic in 1986. Oh, God. So the movie starts with her having a dream of a white man coming in a canoe. Yeah. And the clouds are white and happy. And then all of a sudden the clouds are gray and angry. And she's like, Grandma, what does that mean? Grandma's like, I don't fucking know. But you definitely had a psychic dream. Grandma's hungry. Let's get some grub. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, is everyone having psychic dreams? And you're just like, because Native, because First Nations. Because Native,
yes.
Yeah, and then towards the end of the movie, Ikwe has another psychic vision of everyone having smallpox and like fucking dying all around her. But like we said earlier, Ikwe has no fucking facial expression. She's just pissed the entire fucking movie. She's just stone-faced like, guess I'm gonna die. Guess everyone's gonna die. Womp womp. And then pan flute. And I'm just like, oh God, this movie. Rachel, thoughts?
Okay, first of all, the cover of this VHS has Gare shirtless, and that scene is not in the movie.
Oh my God, what is he? No! No, wait, what? Okay, what is that on his chest? What the fuck is that on his chest?
Well, now you're going to have to put this up on the Instagram so people can see it.
Obviously, so everyone can. Okay, so you're right, this scene... does not appear. Okay, I know what the scene is, though.
Is supposed to be chest hair?
I don't know. I'm real concerned.
Is that glued on chest hair? I'm dying.
In the picture? That's what I'm saying to you. Like, I don't know what I'm looking at. Okay, so the scene that this is supposed to be is right at the very beginning when Ikwe meets Gare. Gare has just shaved off his totally fake, like, yak hair beard that he first arrives in. He has just shaved it off in the river, and he turns around and he sees that Ikwe is staring at him, and he's like, oh, a lassie. I'm not going to do a Scottish accent. You're all welcome. He's like, oh, a lassie. She's staring at me, because obviously, let me go and give her a necklace. So he has, like, a necklace that I assume he's using it as, like, currency, basically. So he turns around and he gives her a necklace, and he's like, are you happy now? Here you go. Which in the movie, he's not wearing a shirt because he's just been bathing and shaving himself in the river. But you don't really see anything. But in the version that they used for the cover art, oh, sweet Jesus. Yeah, this is not the cover art that they have. Like, if you buy this from the Film Board of Canada, so you can go to the National Film Board of Canada.
He was like, no, I did not authorize that.
This is why he's a never nude. I think we found it. We found the moment. So, okay, if you go to the Film Board of Canada, you can buy digital versions of most of these educational films. I don't even know what the cover of this looks like. I think it's just the Film Board of Canada logo. Like, they don't even give it a cover. They don't care. This, however, is Ikwe standing there looking at Gare. Gare's holding the necklace that he gives her in the movie. He's still got his janky-ass yak hair wig on. He has just shaved his yak hair beard. But on his chest, there's kind of a... like a happy trail, like a landing strip, chip.
No, it looks like somebody glued pubic hair to his chin.
Yeah, yeah, but it's like a long rectangle. I'm trying to describe the shape of it. It's like a long rectangle that goes from his clavicle to like sort of his nipples, like to like the bottom of his pecs, sort of.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's brown and it is thick. It is thick and brown and does in fact look like somebody shaved a bunch of pubes and then just glued them all the fuck over. The fuck am I looking at? God, I just
art. You're why? Looking at art, Meg.
Why would they?
Thank you, Allie, for sending us the picture. So much joy.
Oh no, why? This is why they didn't put that in the movie.
That
they filmed it
nowhere online either. You can't find, if you look up Ikwe, all you can find is pictures of the girl. You cannot find him. You can't find that. That
yeah,
cover.
That's a new video image. That's a new image for me.
My other thoughts is that a characteristic we apparently need to add to the list is including actual dead animals in the footage
Thank
for
you.
The film.
Thank you. This is just like Deadly Harvest. Yeah.
If I had a nickel for every time there was a dead animal in a movie,
you'd have
that
two
he's
nickels.
In, it's strange that it happened twice. Like, there was a dead cat. We had. All right.
Did you just
Melody.
Give me a Phineas and Ferb quote there? Is that what you just...
Yes, I did. So, yeah. R.I.P. Melody and R.I.P. this deer.
Not just the deer. They chop through a bunch of animals in this movie, and I fully believe those are like actual deer corpses.
And apparently beavers are spherical.
Okay, so I don't know how to say this that doesn't sound like I myself grew up in a teepee, and I don't want to give American listeners the wrong impression about my Canadian childhood, but we're just going to go ahead and I'm going to try. So when I was in grade 7, our history teacher was again teaching us about the fur traders, because like I said, every history teacher has to have like a whole chapter on the fur traders. And he came in to class one day with a big black garbage bag that he did not explain or like address in any way. And then as he got to the talk about the fur trade and beaver pelts, et cetera, he opens up the garbage bag. He picks up a beaver pelt and he whips it at a kid without saying anything to him. So like the kid thought like a giant animal had just jumped out of this bag and like attacked him. So there was screaming. There was a lot of screaming in the class. But I can say that I have seen a beaver pelt. I'm sure they like passed it around. So I'm sure I touched a beaver pelt. They are not naturally totally spherical. They're big. Like, they're bigger than you would think they would be. Like, the size in the movie, I think, is probably accurate. But, yeah, I don't know why they're all pre-stretched into big hoops. Like, that, I mean, maybe that just makes it easier to bundle them and carry them and then make them into hats later. I don't know. But I fully believe that those are real pelts. Like, everything... I don't know. Like, the wigs are all terrible. Like, I feel like half of the First Nations actors had, like,
These
their actual hair.
So bad.
But some of them were just, yeah, they're just, and then did you see that the actor who plays the chief, the Ojibwe chief, Igwe's dad, later when they're like, oh, we need him to look older, they just clearly took some baby powder and went, pow!
Slapped it on his head. this feels educational. I don't know. There's like, he takes her off and they're going to overwinter. Like, he's trying to build a cabin and she's like, no, we're going to live in this. And he's like, no, we're going to build a fucking cabin. And she's like, I'm not even.
I like that she refuses to talk to him. She just fucking refuses.
To talk to him, and she refuses to speak in English. She just talks to him in her language the entire time. And so, like, we then cut to the winter. I'm like, okay, it's winter. And then she walks in with a fucking baby. Like, those take 9 months. If they got pregnant right away, it's not going to be winter again.
So I noticed this time. So I've watched this movie now 3 times, which you're welcome.
Sorry.
I know. I feel like I've both learned a lot and unlearned all the things that I learned when I was a kid from watching this. But in that scene where they get off their canoe, he doesn't help her at all. He doesn't help her get out of the canoe. He doesn't help her carry the shit. He's just like, fucking come on, Mary. So they get out of, I hate that he calls her Mary. Like, that's the worst part for me. He steals her child and I'm more mad about him calling her Mary. But so they get out of the canoe. She's working on building the teepee and he's off like trying to figure out how to make a clearing because he's going to build like a 4-story wooden cabin, I guess, is his plan. And like, clearly that doesn't work because you're one very delicate Scottish man in Canadian winter. Like, just go in the fucking teepee. So she's trying to build the teepee. He keeps yelling at her like, I need you, like, why aren't you helping me? Why are you ignoring me? Like, I'm giving you an order and I'm a man. So like, you know, chop, chop. When she turns around, she has a little baby bump.
Okay, I don't know. It doesn't need to make sense. It's fine. It's fine. We don't need to justify
that. That's the part of this that you're... Yeah, I mean, I feel like their relationship is interesting because it starts off like, you're my piece of property. And she's like, well, I guess, you know, I was told to go here, so here I am. And then they have sort of a begrudging partnership, like we need to help each other so we don't both starve to death in the in the woods. But they make a baby.
It's not a hands-off relationship because they have like a bunch of kids.
I know.
Because they have the boy and then they have the girl, and there's that weird scene where she's breastfeeding the girl and he's like, not in front of my friends.
I like that he's like, but I like that. Okay. I like that everyone in this movie is horrible. Like, is that terrible to say? Like, I like that it wasn't like the, I mean, besides the psychic visions, which we're going to put a little pin in. I like that it wasn't like that the natives are all like peaceful Pocahontas who do no harm, and they all like live in oneness with nature, and they would never hurt an animal. An animal would just walk up to them and die and be so happy to be made dinner. Like, I like that it wasn't that, but also it wasn't like these dumb, dirty fucking savages. Like, I was like, okay, oh, you like made everyone suck. Like, you made Gare be like, be civilized, and like, fuck you, Mary. Your name's Mary now. Like, I like that he's a prick, but also he is a delicate flower. And they're all being mean to him. And they're all like, look at that hairy asshole who doesn't know how to survive here. And like, you feel for him also because it's like you're plunking a new country. They're all speaking languages that you don't understand. Like, your job is to go and give them shit to get. And then you get furs and then you make money and then you can like afford to live a life. Did you like the scene where Gare appeared to be having like a full on mental breakdown while carving soapstone carvings and singing Wee Willy Winky to himself?
I was getting there. What was that supposed to be? Homesickness?
Homesickness and like actually losing his fucking mind, which I was like, oh, but then he's like, fine. He gets one kiss from a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah. And he's like, let's make a son. And she's like, oh, fine. It's fine.
Can you imagine like having sex with someone with just like that stone pissed off face the entire time and like her not talking? Like, this movie. I can't.
No.
I don't know how they made a baby. Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't talk to each other.
And had the baby and she was all by herself.
Well, he's there when he's not like dropping off pelts, I guess.
Yeah, but she had to give birth by herself unless he brought somebody over.
Oh, yeah. No, it was probably just him sitting there going like, you're being really loud right now.
Yeah. Can you hurry this up? What's taking so long over there?
Can you do that quieter? Oh my God, this movie has so many weird visuals. Although, can I just say that like he looked paler there while having his panic attack than he did at any season of Forever Night that I can recall.
I have like a pet peeve about actors having a sunburn in shows.
Like, and when he first shows up and he is like the reddest red.
And he's like full body sunburn. Like, I don't know why, but that's like I hate it.
I believe a Scotsman being uncomfortable in Canada in the summer, like much more than I believe a Scotsman being uncomfortable in Canada in the winter. So like at least that rang true for me while watching.
Yeah. No, I mean, I got it. I just don't like it. Like, you can be tan, but sunburn for some reason, I'm just like, no.
You don't like a big pink Gare.
He's so pink when he first shows up. Oh, this movie was wildly uncomfortable.
Yep.
I'm not sure if I watched it in the 90s, if I'd have felt better, if I'd have been like, what is happening?
Whatever decade you watched it in, you would have seen Ikwe, who again is played by a 15-year-old girl, taking a like 6-year-old onto her lap and breastfeeding her. And I was like, oh, like, I mean, Gare's being kind of a dick in the scene, but also, oh, you're real big to be breastfeeding still. This is,
okay. I mean, it's birth control. It was used as a form of birth control because for some women, as long as you keep breastfeeding, you won't ovulate again.
Do you think that's why Ikwe was doing it?
I think that's why we get a baby immediately after he tells her to quit. Because he tells her to quit and the next scene is like, another fucking baby! She like pulls the baby out. Oh, God. It would have been
movie is so much.
Theoretically, it would have been a not uncommon way for her to prevent herself from having another baby.
I mean,
if that quote is correct, then that woman did not consult anyone about historical accuracy. She read a Reader's Digest compressed edition about this time period.
You have given a lot more context to the scenes than like I was aware of while watching the movie, which is like the one problem with it being meant to be educational. I feel like without knowing the background context of why some things are happening, I'm not being educated. Like, I don't understand. Like, you were telling me about the, well, tell me again about like the rodents going into the village when the kid, when the little boy is beating the shit out of that little like gerbil with a stick.
Yeah. And then, Gare's character Angus is like, that's brutal. You shouldn't do that. What do you, I don't, why is the Scotsman not, does he like
he's
mice?
He's a delicate flower.
Is this
he's
a pet delicate mouse? Flower.
I don't understand. Well, but like, but it's, I mean, the kid, it was brutal. I mean, the kid is killing, I don't know what it is. It's like a mouse or a gerbil or some kind of a rodent, and it's like fairly large. And the kid has a big walking stick, like a big stick, and is bashing the shit out of this thing on the ground. And he's clearly like chasing it. And everyone in the village is like, no, it's over there. No, it's over there. And the kid's like, all right. And he like runs after it with a stick and he's like, mah, 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 in the head of it. And then you see this thing on the ground and it looks like it's a real dead mouse or rat or gerbil or whatever. It's got blood on it. Like, that is that is really violent. But like you said,
it's unlucky to have a rodent in camp. And so they're probably encouraging him to be very aggressive about killing off rodents because you didn't want them in camp. And there was actually a thing in 1993, and this is how we discovered the hantavirus, which I think is so fascinating, because in Arizona on the reservations, they were having this problem with respiratory illness where these people were dying. They were getting what looked like the flu and then dying. And so medicine men from the tribe showed up and they were like, look, investigators, this happens. We consulted our records. This happens every time there is like a period of high rainfall and then a wet, warm winter and then another period of like flooding and rainfall. And they're like, yeah, I don't that. You, thank you, sir. You can go back to your reservation and whatever. Be a mystical Native American mysticism person. We're not listening to you. And what they found out is there was this one guy that took a sample of lung tissue, and they actually didn't do this until a lady on vacation from Iceland fell sick on the reservation.
Oh, well, she's white, so.
And because they thought this was a specifically native disease. And so they were like, well, we'll figure it out eventually. I don't know what we got the time. And then a lady from Iceland got sick and they were like, oh, shit, it hurts white people. And so they
the whitest took, white people.
So they took a sample of her lung tissue and they put it under a microscope. And this guy was like, I think I've seen this before. And he actually remembered a slide that he'd seen from a sample of lung tissue from a guy in Korea who died in the 1940s from this disease that was similar. And it happened near the Hanta River in Korea.
Oh, so Hanta virus, yeah.
And so they were like, oh, it's the not the same virus, but it's in the same family and it's creating the same problem. We can probably treat it the same way. And so that's how we discovered it was the Hanta virus. And what happened was when you have a period of high rainfall and then a warm, wet winter and then more rainfall, you get a rodent explosion. You get like the trees produce more nuts and so you get more rodents. And so more rodents were breaking into houses on the reservation and, you know, defecating and doing what rodents do in your house. And so they were talking to a guy from the tribe and he was like, yeah, there's a saying in our tribe that if a rat runs over or a mouse runs over your clothing, you burn your clothing. And now I get why. So it was like a saying or a superstition in their culture. Yeah, but it was literally morality. Because you got sick from that. And so... yeah, that rodent could have been sick with something. They could carry diseases. And part of the reason why they're unlucky to have is because they make you sick with smallpox and shit.
See, for an educational film, I think that context would have been really fucking helpful. Instead of me just going, why are they beating the shit out of this mouse with a stick?
Well, technically we hadn't discovered it yet because it's not for 7 more years. This is 1986.
No, but like if there'd been something similar... that was like, here are some of the tribal superstitions or like, here's some of their beliefs. And they've got like, they have a basis in reality instead of just all natives are psychic. And also they kill rats.
And also they kill rats. And isn't this white guy mean he doesn't accept any of their like beliefs?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because he's like shitting on their beliefs. But then at the same time, it is objectively sort of cruel to beat the shit out of a mouse in the head with a big stick.
He's real Mr. Mixed Signals because he makes, like, he's in there carving like houses and little chairs, and he's crying and singing Wee Willie Winkie to himself. And she like hugs him and gives him this super awkward kiss.
So awkward.
And he ends up moving into the house that she builds. They don't build that cabin. They live in her like teepee that she's building. I think he calls it a wigwam, which I don't think a wigwam looks like that. But they live in her thing that she builds. And then he ends up carving a doll for his daughter. But then he's like, okay, here's your doll. Now, son, you come with me and we'll be together because you're my son. So it's a real mixed signals moment where you're is he supposed to be shown liking her, but he doesn't think he should like her? Or is this
I think
just
he
like
likes
a-
their kids. I think it's like, you're my helpmeet. I basically bought you. Part of buying you is that sometimes you let me stick my dick in that. And sometimes a baby pops out, and then that's my baby, and I love my baby.
Yeah.
It's the one redeeming thing about this movie is, like I said, I think all the characters suck. Like none of them, like, it's not like the colonists are great and the natives are dumb, and it's not that the natives are put upon and the colonists are terrible. They all are assholes. And I was like, well, I guess if that's like, we have to pick a way that we're going to look at history, everybody is terrible. It feels very true to human nature. So, and men especially are terrible to women. And I was like, well, it's nice that we can come together, the Europeans and the First Nations, and we can all agree that we hate women and we're going to treat them like shit.
In thumbs perpetuity, up. Amen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when she goes back at the end, because when she runs away from him with her daughters, because he like pawns her son off. She goes back to the tribe and her friend's like, oh yeah, we've gotten really rich because of our trade agreement. And she's like, okay. Because she got sold for that trade agreement. And she's like, do you want something? You could pick out a necklace. And she's like,
oh yeah. How much is my virginity and my childhood worth?
Oh,
one of those necklaces?
Oh, can I have the blue one? You think it's worth the blue one? Can I have that trade bead?
Oh God! Thanks, well, and the best part is like, I don't remember
some smallpox.
Where in the story? Die! Use my psychic powers to kill you. I don't remember where in what order it happens. Whether it's she sees her friend with the necklaces first, and then she talks to her dad, or vice versa. But she talks to her dad, and her dad's like, yeah, actually, you know what? The Cree are going to give us a much better deal for these beaver pelts. So we're not going to sell to your shitty husband anymore. I hope that's cool. And she's just like, oh, okay. So you, just to make sure, you sold me and I got raped by this guy a whole bunch and some babies popped out. And now I have to take care of him and them. And he's losing his mind and he has a bad wig and he's real hairy and smelly. And the money that keeps us alive, that's going to go bye-bye now? Okay. Like, I feel this movie should be remade where Ikwe goes nuts and just kills everybody. Like, I feel like that's, like, I want the Ikwe revenge. Ikwe 2, Ikwe's revenge. That's what I want.
Where she somehow survives.
Yeah. No, or it's like the ghost of Ikwe. 300 years later, she meets a vampire cop and she just is the ghost.
She's like, hang on. Whoa. You got to be immortal? And he's like, yeah. Sorry.
I stopped kissing 15-year-old girls and I got an upgrade.
This feels, I mean, probably historically, 15 would have been, they'd have given her away at 15.
I know, but like, that doesn't mean you had to hire a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, heaven forbid we provide any context at all. I don't even think we say what age she is or anything.
No, all we have at the beginning is that she's not married. Because all the other women are like, ugh, like, don't date a guy so soon. Like, enjoy being young and free. Because as soon as you're married, like, they don't give you gifts anymore. They just put babies in you. And then you have to work. And it sucks. Like, don't do that. Like, that's all we get. Like, it feels like she's a teen. But, like, that's the problem with this movie. Is it's meant to be educational. But there's, like, no context for any fucking thing. It's just, everyone's terrible. Life was hard. Gare pawns her kid off. She fucks back to her village. Everyone gets smallpox and dies. Gare is somewhere. He's napping the last time we see him. I have no idea. I mean, just, you know, he could be napping still.
I think it's at night. Isn't it like she leaves at night?
Oh, probably. I'll say sure. Yes.
I'm wondering if this was supposed to be accompanied by some kind of curriculum.
I mean, based on my own childhood, the curriculum would have been, it would have just been like the fur trade was a thing that exists. Watch the movie while your teacher goes to have a smoke.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that.
All right. Or be hungover, whichever. Okay.
I mean,
yeah. I was just like, maybe you went through a whole lesson and then you were like, okay, let's watch a day in the life or 8 years in the life of
If there's anyone that would have gotten whatever equivalent lesson, like it would have been me. They would not shut the fuck up about fur traders. Fur traders are like the one part of Canadian history that like I don't know why. Like you learn about it every single year over and over and over again. I have no idea what happened in the 60s. Not a clue. But the fur trade, like ad nauseum, like over and over, everyone was fur, they were the coureur de bois. See, I remember that now.
Wow.
That's what they called them, the coureur de bois. And they would ride in their little, canoes and they would go and they would trade with the First Nations and they would get the beaver pelts and they would bring them back to Europe and they would make them into fancy hats. Like that's the fancy hat period of history is like all I ever learned about over and over again. And I have no context for a single fucking thing in this goddamn movie.
It's probably like the Revolutionary War here.
Probably. I mean, it's like the same.
It's the
same
last time we were proud of ourselves legitimately.
I mean, yeah.
Fine. Don't need to pull those punches.
Yeah. So, I mean, characteristic wise, I mean, he's got a wig. He's got a wig. I mean, we talked about he wears weird wigs and a lot of things. And he's
I feel like the peak moment is when he's wearing the wig and then he's got the leather set, like the leather band. But the leather band is not like a headband. It's just around his forehead and then around the back of his head. Like a halo.
He's a man of fashion and taste, you know?
It's like he kept sweating the wig off and they were like, we're going to keep this thing.
We're going to strap it to your head.
Strap it to your fucking head. And
oh
then,
my God.
I don't know. I feel like they had one wig for all the natives and it was just like slight bangs pulled back and they just passed it around.
Yeah. It was all the hair looked real, real grody, real nasty. And I think, like I said, I think some of the First Nations actors, I think that was like their actual hair, but I think for like most of the guys, I think they, like you said, they had like one wig and they're like, all right, Billy, it's your turn to wear the wig.
And they were like, you must have long hair. And they were like, I don't. It's 1986. And they're like, well, you can't be native if you don't have long hair. And so then they gave them the long haired wig.
We want verisimilitude in this bullshit movie. The government's paying us. The first time I watched it, I definitely thought that they had one Hudson Bay blanket and they were just passing it around between each other, like scene by scene. But then at the very end, there's like two Hudson Bay blankets. And I was like, you must have had the real government budget for that. So he's got his weird, like, yak hair, like, fucking mullet wig. So there's that. At the beginning of the movie, he has the world's most insane beard, which, can we just pause for a second? As soon as he, like, trims it off and has that, like, weird, feel sort of racist exchange with the children in the river where they're like playing with him and he's like, I'm trying to shave with a straight razor, leave me the fuck alone. He takes his little mirror and he turns it around, like faces it at the kids, and they're all afraid of the mirrors because
I guess they're just
afraid of the mirrors. So they're all like cringing away from him and he's like, ah, look at yourself in the mirror, like ah. And I was like, oh, this is, I don't like you scaring kids with mirrors, but okay. So, but as soon as he like trims off his clearly just glued on 5 minutes ago beard, and he's got like the little goatee. Did you notice that he looked exactly like Phoebus from Hunchback of Notre Dame, the cartoon? Do you know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about, right? And he's got the same kind of like page boy mullet cut and the little.
It's Chris Klein's character.
Yeah, Kevin Klein.
Kevin, thank you, Kevin Klein.
Kevin Klein lives in my heart at all times, so we can't. It's him and Edward Harriman and Gare in a little love triangle.
Or the guy from Road to El Dorado.
That's all. I was gonna say that's also Kevin Klein. But no, you're right. That's Kenneth Branagh. Yeah, but yeah, the same character design. Yeah, the same model, definitely.
Yeah.
He wears a poofy sort of Shakespearean type shirt at one point. So that was
those are referred to as trade shirts.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the historical accuracy.
I don't know, according to the reenacting people.
No, I believe your family.
Yeah.
Your family by blood.
I am given a wool wrap skirt and a trade shirt to wear.
So let's see. So he's got the wig, he's got the beard, he's got his, you said trade shirt?
Yeah, trade shirt.
He does an accent. He does accents a bunch. This is like, I think this is our first time hearing him do an accent, and he sustains it. I thought he does a good job. He sounds Scottish.
Do a horrific Scottish accent. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Even
yeah,
when he's trying to be like, I'm drunk in Scottish, he still does a good job. Although the guy playing bagpipes was a little over the top. Can you imagine being like a First Nations person and all of a sudden there's bagpipes and you're like, oh my God, we're all going to die. Like, can you imagine never having heard bagpipes and then all of a sudden.
I like that they both have a scene where like the Ojibwe tribal chief gets the musket, shoots it off, and then does like a little like stereotypical dance with it. And then they're like, to even that out, we have Scotsmen. Okay, hear me out. We're going to have them get drunk as fuck and play bagpipes because we want to be equally offensive to everybody, equally racist. Go. But yeah, it is. That was a scene. It's weird. They have some guys who are supposed to be like Quebecois and like you hear them speak French and it sounds like Quebecois French to me, like as best as I can hear. Because again, they only give you subtitles some of the time sometimes when they're speaking in the Ojibwe language, in Ojibwe, but like not every time they're speaking in Ojibwe. And the version that I got from the National Film Board of Canada website refused to give me regular subtitles. And I'm like, you're a government funded movie. Give me fucking subtitles. Like, I'm deaf as hell. Give me subtitles. They refuse. I even tried looking up like if there was, you know, sometimes people will like make their own subtitles and you can kind of manually add them in. I couldn't find, I guess.
What? Nobody did that for
Ojibwe? I know. I know. I was real disappointed by it. But so like, as best as I could hear, it sounded like legit enough French. But then when they were speaking English, like the accent that they threw out there was like so wildly inconsistent and weird. And I was like, where are you from again? Like where? But I thought Gare's accent was good. So we've got an accent. We've got weird wigs. We've got people. They commented on his beauty just in this movie. They just kept saying how fucking ugly he was. But the commentary. It was a commentary. So I think it counts as a characteristic. He gets a kiss with a lady. He gets a kiss with a child. I know. I have so many questions to ask him about this movie. Like,
it's fine. No, he probably does not remember doing this movie.
We need to make him remember. Be like, do you remember Ikwe? Like, let's hear. Like, we brought it with us. Let's
you're
watch.
Naked on the cover.
That fucking fur patch.
Is that
patch.
Your nipple? Are they still that dark?
They're black. Oh no.
Why are 70s nipples all so dark? I have, and I say this color correction with no issue. Amount of hubris. I have seen a lot of 70s nipples at this point in my career. They are all extremely... Was there a high iron diet? What was happening in the 70s?
First off, we have to ask Gare. But second off, I have to believe... I think you're right. Like, I think it's just... I think it's like a color correction issue. I think like however they were doing makeup or like the color... Because you know when you watch like... an older movie, sometimes you're like, why do all the colors look so saturated? Why does everything look so weird?
It could have been, you know how like people color in their eyebrows now?
Shut up. No, I can't. Like, I can't. They already gave him a dark chestnut brown, like a mahogany brown, like chest soul patch. Like I can't, if there was some poor girl on set with like a little makeup brush being like, bloop, I'll cry. I can't. This movie is so traumatic. This movie is so rough.
No,
but
they
like
just held a circle up with the spray paint.
Maybe that's why he's a never nude. He like doesn't have nipples and they're like, well, you're going to be shirtless in this scene, man. So here's the template. Like,
oh God, no.
Oh, wow.
Okay, temporally, this falls 2 years before Diamonds and 3 years after Scavenger Hunt on the Littlest Hobo.
Really? This is between Scavenger Hunt and Diamonds?
Yeah, and this looks... Well, he looks so much so older different. In this than he does in Diamonds. And Diamonds is 2 years after this.
Maybe because of the hair. Well, I mean, also in this, he's like sweaty and dirty the whole time. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to age you up.
I think he did Diamonds as a palate cleanser. He was like, I need people to tell me I'm pretty.
Well, in Diamonds, they do every like 13 seconds.
I know.
So,
what I'm saying. He was like, I need to take something where they tell me I'm pretty. And they were like, he picked up the script and he was like, hot damn, this is it.
Because they kept like, saying that I was so like the beautiful. Son of a dog. They kept comparing me to a hairy dog. I'm not hairy.
I kind of hope they didn't tell him what they were saying. the whole time that he literally just had to sit there while they were talking. And he was like, what are you saying? Because they're like, he goes, what are you guys talking about? I really hope that's real. And they're like, oh, Gare, they're just saying that you're quite the catch and that you're really handsome. And he's like, well, yeah, thanks.
Okay. All right, I'll be in this movie. All right.
Yeah. I don't love the beard, but maybe it's working for me. I don't know. Maybe that's why he got that. You ever seen the pictures of him with the goatee?
I've seen a lot of pictures of him with a goatee.
When he had the goatee in like the early 2000s.
Oh, that particular version of the goatee? I'm sure I have.
Yeah, the silver fox goatee. Maybe he was remembering Ikway and he was like, well, they kept telling me I was really good looking. So I'll harken back to that.
Oh my God, you're killing me. Okay.
I had to find the silver lining in this movie, Meg, because everybody dies.
I know. Well, except for the little girl that they send off into the fucking wilderness.
Oh, yeah, where she went to go die of smallpox because she'd been around her mother, who was clearly the one who carried it back.
She has her bedroll. She has her little baby Cindy Lou Who dress. And and her weird little blonde doll, which can we just like, I know that Gare is blonde and his kids are, I guess, genetically half blonde. But like, I felt sort of bad that he was like,
oh, yeah, good point.
Here's a blonde doll. Here's a doll that looks nothing the fuck like you. Here you go. Here's a white doll. And I'm like, oh, we were doing that in the 80s. We didn't really have. Yeah. Oh, my God. Just all right. Bye. Mom's going to die from smallpox. Bye. Although I will say that the makeup I thought was good. The smallpox makeup like seemed legit. Like I didn't know it
on their forearms.
Yeah. I didn't know what smallpox looked like. So I made the don't do this. Don't ever fucking do this. I made the mistake of Googling what does smallpox look like. And the movie is actually restrained. The movie is actually quite restrained compared to like what an actual smallpox victim would look like.
Yeah, lots of pus-filled blisters.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know why the movie painted them all pink. That was a choice. But it's still, the blisters were blistery looking. And I was grossed out, which I think was probably the desired effect. So there's that. I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's educational in like, this was like the basic situation in 1770s Canada. Like there's native people and they were trading with the European people. And also there was smallpox. Like, I mean, you probably got as much from me telling you that as you would get from the movie, but it's,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm glad that they used native, I was going to say actors, but apparently just native guys who were hanging around and the lady.
People that she found out and about.
Like loaded them up in her van.
She was like, hey, are y'all First Nation? And they were like, yeah. She was like, get in the fucking car. And then she just drove off with them.
So if you notice when you're watching, I don't know if you like immediately turned it off as soon as the credits came on, which is an instinct, I understand. But if you look at the credits, there's like two families. There's like two families of like eight people each. You like found two families and had them play every single native person in the entire movie. She's like, all right, cool. You guys look alike. You can be the same tribe. Get in the fucking car. Like, yeah. I was like, okay, well.
I did like the font for Ikwe when it first opens and it says Ikwe. I like that font. And then I was like, it's going to all go down from here.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel.
It sure did. So if you guys want to go watch a movie that is native produced by natives, go watch Smoke Signals if you need a palate cleanser.
I have not seen that. What's it about?
It is it's based on a book called Lone Ranger and Tonto Fist Fight in Heaven. And it's about a guy who finds out that his estranged father has died and he goes on a like road trip to collect his ashes.
And okay, so like a more modern.
Yeah, and I think his estranged father's played by Gary Farmer, so.
Can I be honest? The whole movie, I was like, you're in here somewhere, Gary. I just haven't seen you yet. But, like, I know, like, anytime there's, like, any native character, like, at all in Canadian television, Gary Farmer, like, pops up, like, in the background somewhere. I was just like, I know you're here, man. I'm going to hear your heavy breathing at some point. Like, where are you? Where are you, Gary Farmer?
Where are you, Gary? He's hiding.
He's in the teepee the whole time.
They take off in the canoe. He just grew up real fast.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, go watch Smokes. It's an older movie, but it's a good movie. And it's a native movie. Like, it's a...
Yeah.
They made it. It's produced by starring. And it's a really good movie.
A palate cleanser would be good.
This is only 9 years after he was in Deadly Harvest. Harvest. Yeah. He had quite the decade. He had Deadly Harvest, and he had Littlest Hobo twice, I think. And yes. Then he had this one.
One of these things is not like the other. Wow. I mean,
this had to be better than, you know what? No, because at the end of Deadly Harvest, everybody dies.
Yeah, there's a messed up theme to some of these early movies.
Yeah. And you can't even blame it on the 70s because this is 1986.
Yeah. Dark as hell. I didn't know.
Yeah. I mean, dark but accurate. Like, that's the kind of stuff that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. I wish that.
And smallpox.
Yay. I wish they had given us more context. I wish that they had not had Ikwe be actually verifiably psychic, because it's like that takes away from the.
It does.
The reality of it a little.
Yeah. She was trying to make it fantastical. And like, if you want this to be a Film Barn of Canada, like accurate, like we're portraying a historical event, then maybe she doesn't.
Don't make her psychic.
She doesn't need psychic powers. I don't know. It's just like a thing.
Yeah. It is very weird to have like, here's my educational film, but also all brown people can read your mind. And I was like, what? Like, what?
Holy shit. Like, you're just perpetuating these weird 90s stereotypes.
These weird stereotypes, yeah.
Perpetuating, yeah. And I don't know if that was the actress who couldn't make facial expressions or if she was going for
stoic and constipated the entire movie. Never acts ever again. Both of us tried to look up Hazel King. If you look up Hazel King, there's a movie where Angie Harmon plays a character called Hazel King, and that is the only Hazel King you can find other than, oh yes, a girl named Hazel King was in Ikwe.
Yeah.
She's like, she's probably hanging out with Deborah Duchenne.
This isn't the first time he's run a woman off completely from acting. Not him. I'm not saying he's directly responsible for either one. That was a joke. But also,
Both of them were like, well, we kissed Geraint Wyn-Davies. And I'd like to note that I said his name correctly this time for once. We both kissed Geraint Wyn-Davies. We shall never act again. And they both just
laughed. We have peaked.
Oh, my God. I mean, she's not a bad actress. Mm. Like, when she's talking to the little kid, I believe that she's talking to the little kid. And when she's like mad at Gare, I believe that she's mad at Gare. And when she hugs him when he's having his full-on manic panic breakdown, like I sort of believe it, but it's just her face is very much like it doesn't move very much. It's just like I am here and I'm sort of pissed off to be here and life is hard and my face is going to reflect that. And I'm just like, I mean,
I've been reading a lot of classic sci-fi novels and I feel like every single classic sci-fi novel is one gentleman scientist who's some sort of savant in his field. And then his plucky native sidekick who, kind of grounds him, but is not as smart as him. And it ends up being a lot of, oh, isn't that cute? He's doing his best to the native, like.
But that's one thing to recommend this movie is like, I never felt like the movie was talking down to the First Nations characters. The First Nations characters were the ones making fun of Gare and being like, isn't that guy stupid? How come all he wants is fur pelts? Like, what's wrong with him? Doesn't he understand that they're like everywhere on all the animals and like. There's stuff like, what do they want hats out of like all these beavers? Like, that's dumb.
Yeah.
And this guy is dumb and he doesn't know how to live here and he doesn't know how to take care of himself and he doesn't know how to build a teepee. And like, so I liked that they were, I liked that, especially in that first scene where they're all doing their negotiation, I like that the Cree translator and the Ojibwe chief and also like all the other Ojibwe guys just like hanging out shooting the shit were all like, look at this fucking asshole. Look at this guy. He's all hairy and weird and smelly and dumb. Look how fucking dumb he is. He doesn't know how to do anything. For a movie from 1986 that is hard to watch just because it's like meandering and sort of miserable, like I did appreciate that it didn't feel like it was talking down to like either side. Like, they both felt very humanized. Like, I understood where they were all coming from. Even though all the male characters do like talk down to all the female characters, that felt historically accurate. Like I got it. Like,
presently
I believe
accurate.
Eternally accurate. I mean, like, the way that the characters love each other was hard to understand, but it mostly felt like hard because their lives are hard. And so the way that they love is hard. Like the father, yeah. like the chief.
Well, marriage for love wasn't like a...
No, no. But like the parents seem to love their children and like want them back, but like also understand like I need guns. And the way that I get guns is shipping you off with Gare in a canoe. Yeah. So I guess we have to do what we have to do.
But it did kind of feel like the director felt that way about her native actors.
Based on that quote, yeah.
Yeah, just so it was like, why she's doing her best. I'm not going to make her do any more takes because I don't think it gets any better than this.
I mean, yeah, it's I will agree that I can't tell based on the way that Hazel King acts if her face was an intentional choice or just she was like, you're paying me $10 a day in a sandwich. This is the face you get.
Right.
Here you go.
Yeah.
I don't
Could
know.
Could go either way.
Yeah.
No way to know. But
educational?
Yeah.
So how to rate this? It's educational. Like if you don't know anything about the fur trade, like you're gonna learn just by, I don't know, by being like around the movie by osmosis. I mean, the cover for the VHS is now the funniest thing I've ever fucking seen in my whole life. So that might be what I put up on Instagram. Like I had another post planned, but I think it might two. Just be.
You can do two.
a whole series of that Ikwe. Three sloppy wet kisses because I feel like educational and Gare is in it. And he has a pretty big part. I mean, he's in most of the movie until he takes a nap and never comes back.
Which is close to the end.
Which is pretty close to the He has the nap. She takes the kids back to her village. Everyone has smallpox and dies at the end. Mm-hmm. Like a three. Like you learn stuff. If you go to Canada and you talk to anybody my age, they probably had to watch this movie in school and they'll have flashbacks. So that could be fun for you. Three, yeah. I guess
fucking Ikwe, you watch that for fun? Yes,
fun and edutainment.
I'm gonna go one raised eyebrow out of five.
That's fair.
Nobody told him he was pretty. He didn't make out with anybody. He clearly made out off screen because they had some babies.
I mean, there was a kiss that happens. I'm gonna not call it making out because I don't want to throw up in my mouth.
One eyebrow is exclusively for the nipple on the cover of the VHS.
Not the chest nope, soul patch?
That's not his, and they've clearly photoshopped, like, it's not Photoshop.
Oh, but no, they probably, not like, Photoshop. They clearly glued that shit onto him. Maybe that's why he's a never nude, because it, like, ripped his skin off and he has, like, a permanent scar.
That man does not have body hair. He is too blonde for you to be able to see his body hair. And then the fact that they glued black hair on there, like, blah, blah, and they just stuck it out there.
When you showed me that picture, I was like, oh, is he wearing a bag with a furry strap on it? And then I was like,
I thought he did. Yeah. Because you were like, what's on his chest? And I was like, I don't know. I thought it was just a strap. Like he's wearing a messenger bag and he has a strap on.
Yeah. I feel like, I hate to say that, like, the cover of the VHS, which neither of us had seen until after watching the movie, is the best part of the movie, but, like, it is the funniest thing I've ever seen. He's got, like you said, he's got purple nipples and, like, a chest soul patch of deep brown chocolate hair on the blondest man that God put on the face of this earth.
And his hair is still blonde. It's not like they changed the color.
Oh, no. The wig is blonde. The hair underneath the wig is blonde. The eyebrows are blonde. The chest hair, chocolate. Sultry chocolate.
It's so bad.
Oh.
I can't. I'm like, it's fine. There's a one raised eyebrow exclusively for that. Which thank you again, listener, Allie, for sending that to us.
You gave us the only joy of this whole fucking episode. So, really yes, thank was. You.
Can't believe you own that.
Although you did also threaten to wear a Gare Can Get It shirt to meet Gare. So, like, I feel like we're now even.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it was a gift. The VHS cover was a gift.
It was a gift to compensate for the 30 gray hairs I got when you were like, I'm going to wear it to see Garrett. I was like, huh?
Do it.
I mean, I sort of want you to. I want you to do it only because I want him to be like, What's that looks sort of like me. What is that on your shirt? And her being like, get it.
Like Superman. Just pulls it apart. I'm needed.
I can get it. And I do. Oh my God. This movie exists. Anyways,
the end. Bye, friends.
Bye.
Oh, bye.